There is a different mindset here in the Carolinas. There's a definite attitude of politeness and kindness and respect. I was a little lost driving up. I needed some direction, so I pulled into a gas station, and there wasn't very many people around. This young guy was coming out, and at first I thought maybe he's not the best guy to ask for directions. I knew that the shade of green did not grow out of his head naturally, you know, in that fashion, nor was it, it didn't emerge from his scalp in those spikes, and he had several tattoos and piercings and that sort of thing in it. But I, nevertheless, I kind of tapped him on the shoulder as he was passing by, and I said, I need some directions. Can you give me a hand? And I was very surprised by his response. He turned to me, and he said, well, yes, sir, I can help you. You know, where do you need to go? And this young guy, I don't even think he was 20 years old yet, very articulate, very well-spoken, very kind and respectful. A lot of sir and yes, sir, and I hope we can. Is there anything else I can do for you, sir? And it was just a reflection. That was one of my first contacts, and it was repeated throughout my visit. And even here, you stop for gas, you go to a restaurant, there's a high degree of respect, and it's part of the culture. How do people end up like that? How do people end up thinking the way they do? And how do people end up behaving the way that they do? How do you get your morals? How do you think the way, a thinking process? And if you go from place to place, you'll notice that there is a difference in the way people think and the way that they behave. There's a definite culture. Where are the boundaries for this particular kind of culture? I don't know where it begins and ends, but it's in a general area here that you can define a certain kind of a mentality and a culture. That's what I wanted to start off with, was discussing, outlining what has happened in this country. We started off with a particular kind of culture. What is culture and how does it form? Anthropologists and sociologists have studied the subject in a scientific way for well over a century now, and those things that make up a culture are fairly well defined, and you can come up with quite a long list, but you can basically boil culture down to what they would term norms and values. What are the norms of a culture? Norms are merely expected ways of behaving. So in any kind of a culture, there are certain expectations, if you were a part of it, that you are going to behave in a certain manner. And the other part that they attribute to culture, that defines culture, are values. So you've got norms and values. What does a culture value? What's important to that culture? And that culture, in turn, produces a certain type of person, personality. We all bring into this room, the individuals in here, there may be some differences, but there's also a lot of commonality. It comes from culture. You behave and you value things a certain way that are different from another culture. The way we dress, the way we speak, the way we, all of our behavior and what we value is largely a reflection of our culture. I don't see anyone in this room that has a bone in their nose, or, you know, a shaved head with tattoos, or, well, that might be a little closer to certain subcultures in the community here. But the reason you don't is because in this culture, that's not an expected form of behavior, or it's not something that we value in terms of beauty or status or power or anything like that. So what specifically has happened to American culture? I think everybody on an entire spectrum, you take just everybody in this country, I don't think you'd find many people that would disagree with the statement that our culture has changed. I think some people would argue that it's changed for the better, and I think there's a lot of people that would say that it's changed for the worse. But what has it changed from? What was American culture? What defined American culture at its founding? What did our founders bring to the table in terms of an understanding that formed the basic worldview? And that term is now kind of popular. It's common currency to use the term, you know, worldview. Especially Christians are now talking. It's quite the buzz. We're talking about worldview. You've got to have the proper worldview. And a culture is nothing more than a mirror image of the dominant or the hegemonic, there's a 10-cent word for you, worldview. Hegemony, if you don't know, is just that principle or a culture, for example, that is the dominant one. It is spread it's widespread and it's the dominant one. There may be some subcultures or some anti-hegemonic factors that are at work in a community or a culture. But what was the one that formed, what was the worldview that is, that formed America and made it distinct from all other cultures? Was it strictly a product of European culture, or was it something distinct? This is a topic in and of itself that you could probably devote a university semester just discussing alone. But I'm going to narrow it down to one idea that grew out of their worldview that formed American culture specifically, and it was the basis for their government. I'm just going to throw this out. I usually don't ask an audience to fill in the blank, but I'm going to do it right now to start this thing off. And that is, if you could encapsulate the principle, and I'm going back to the founding, what made America America? What did we found our government on? What was the one principle, and it's in one word, that makes America America and different from any other culture or country, politically and culturally? Can somebody throw out a word to me that would define that? I mean, if you're an American, every American should know at least this one principle, because our founding documents were based on it, Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, all of our Supreme Court decisions up until the 20th century, everything was based on this one concept, and it's in one word. Does anybody know? Very close, but no cigar. The one word that we're looking for is property. Property. And why property? The Bible, the law, I mean, we make laws. All law is based on, is related to property. And you either have good law that protects property, or you have bad law that destroys property. Now, the very fact that we didn't have a snap answer to that, the very fact that this isn't, we know right away what the answer to that is a reflection of how far we've really departed from our understanding of what this culture, what makes American culture distinct. And we've really departed from these ideas. Now, you can't get to this idea, this concept, and I'm going to discuss it in a little detail in just a moment, without someone said the Bible. You can't get to this concept with any other religion on the face of the planet. You can't get there with secular humanism. You can't get to the concept of property with Islam. You can't get there with Buddhism. You can't get there with Hinduism. You can't get there with evolution. You cannot get property, and therefore, somebody else said liberty. Liberty is a direct result of property. You cannot get there unless you start with the Bible, and more accurately, the God of the Bible, who is specific. He grants you certain possessions. Another way to look at this word is what belongs to you. There is a wide body of literature that goes and discusses this issue. This was something that grew out of the Protestant Reformation. The Catholic Church, by the way, my apologies to all my Catholic friends that are out there, but Catholicism destroys the idea of property. Catholicism is a worldview that is more based on paganism than it is on Christianity. We use the same language. We talk about Jesus and the Bible and two totally different concepts. It was tyrannical, and it destroyed property, and thus liberty, justice, and the law was based on protecting property, but not the individual's property rights. As the Bible became more available to thinkers and to theologians and to the common man as a result of the Protestant Reformation, they began to think on a wide variety of topics, and one of them was, what is the purpose of government? What makes good government? What makes bad government? This idea of property, something that comes out that God gives you, it is a gift from God, and it is yours. It's your possession, and that good government is based on protecting what God gives you, period. As these ideas, they were mostly based on and justified out of Scripture. But they weren't most, they were very, very good arguments, but they weren't necessarily the most eloquent. John Locke, at the end of the 17th century, probably made the most eloquent case for property. And it was the view that was most admired by far and away by all the founders. Now, he didn't try to do it justifying it based on Scripture and God, although he did slightly. He was actually trying to refine it and use a rationalistic approach. But the ball had been set in motion by the Protestant Reformation and the Protestant thinkers. but it was summed up, and I'm just going to use for my examples here, James Madison, President James Madison's little essay. It's worth reading. It's very short, and he entitled it Property. It does a really good job of summing up a wide body of information and reflected the view that was at the founding. He said, property is that dominion which one man claims and exercises over the external things of the world in exclusion to every other individual. Okay, so this is, I think, what everybody's common understanding of what property is. It's stuff. It's things that we own. You know, this computer's mine, the chairs belong to somebody, and your property has got property lines and your house is on it. That's what you normally think of in terms of property. And that you have dominion over it, which you exercise over those things, that no one else has a right to exercise dominion over. What's mine is under my control. What is yours is under your control. And I don't have a right to have dominion over your property. And he goes on to explain. He says, in its larger meaning, in its larger and juster meaning, it embraces everything to which a man may attach a value and have a right, and which leaves to everyone else the like advantage. So it's not just stuff, he's saying. This idea of property includes more than just the physical things that you own. It's everything that you have a possession in, a right to exercise control over, and attach value to. He says, in the former sense, a man's land or merchandise or money is called his property. Okay, that's pretty simple. And if I said the word property, that's probably what would come to your mind. He says, in the latter sense, however, a man has property in his opinions and the free communication of them. Okay, your opinions, that's non-tangible, isn't it? Your opinions. And when they said opinions, they meant something a little more than, well, that's just your opinion and I have my own opinion on the matter. It's really your convictions. It's what you believe is right and what you believe is wrong. It's a very non-tangible thing, but this is very much your possession, your property, and the free communication of them. That's why the first Bill of Rights is that you have the right to religious freedom and the freedom of the press. You have a right to express them. It's right here. This is where the First Amendment came from. It was an expression, a protection of property rights, although the word property isn't in the Bill of Rights. It was, here's another 10-cent word for it, propaedeutic. In other words, there's a body of language. Any discipline, sometimes disciplines have to have a prior understanding of simpler things, and they take them for granted when you go to discuss it. In other words, if I'm talking about physics, there's certain branches of mathematics and mechanics and geometry and things that you have to understand before we even get into the higher stuff. But once that body of knowledge is understood, then we can deal with this, and these things aren't even discussed in detail. Property is the underlying word and the underlying concept that forms American, or did inform American culture, and they built a government on it. And it was that propaedeutic body of knowledge that they built on from there. He has a property of peculiar value in his religious opinions and in the profession and practice dictated by them. This is a property, right? You own your religious conviction. He has a property very dear to him in the safety and liberty of his person. Here's another, you don't normally think of, my property includes my very person. It's my body. And each property, whether it's an opinion, a conviction, a religious conviction, or it's a piece of tangible property, or it's your body, each kind of property that you can define has a boundary. A boundary at which everything on the outside is not yours, and everything within the boundary is yours. And your body's no different. Your skin is your property line. That's your boundary. And if anyone invades that, let's say with a knife, or a bullet, or a scalpel, or anything else, or even strikes you, it's a crime. It's a property crime, but it's a crime against the property of your person. He has an equal property in the free use of his faculties and the free choice of the objects on which to employ them. Here is, and this is where liberty comes in. Somebody said liberty. You can't have liberty without the concept of property, what belongs to you. And these properties, these possessions, are a gift to you by God.